Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It is the 3rd of February and 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. We're thrilled that you're with us. Very nice. It's sort of a dank day, still a little stuff on the road in many areas. And, you know, it's a good old-fashioned winter day. And we're glad that you're with us. And whatever you're doing, we hope you're safe and you're sound and you're ready for our conversation that will unfold over the next several hours. So let me introduce everybody, and you can be a part of that conversation too by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group. WAMC's Alan Shartok, first and foremost. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hardly first and foremost, but I am fine. And I'm delighted that we're here together, all of us, on this second day after a historic fun drive and coming together and making it clear we're not going to let this radio station go down. And very sad morning because of the funeral service at the Capitol for the fallen officer who defended against the hordes. It's very sad. Can you imagine the family and the whole thing? It's really more than one can accept.
And the president visiting and going to the Capitol to pay his respects this morning. Yes, very, very sad indeed. All right. We go to Chris Churchill, Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris, our little ray of sunshine. Good. How are you?
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good to have you here, as always. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin, we call him Bob. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be here. And I always do think of Chris Churchill as a ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
So you took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I read his column. It's like, oh, I'm going to feel better about life right now.
Yes. Yeah, because he wasn't picking
up. I changed the name of the column.
Yeah, that's right.
Chris is ray of sunshine.
I wonder if Andrew Cuomo thinks of him as a little ray of sunshine.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he looks forward to it every morning with his coffee.
Remember, it's a good day when your name's not in Chris's column. So.
Investigative journalist and New Albany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. Can you hear me? They have decided to chop down a tree across from my house, and there's a wood chipper and a cutter going. Can you hear it, or are we okay?
We are okay. We do not hear it yet. Let's put it that way.
That's all I can hear. I think I'm moving into another room, so.
All right.
No, you're fine. I miss the days when you went into a soundproof studio to do these shows.
Yeah, those were the days. But that may be a while still, so we'll put up with a wood chipper for today. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let's go to the stories for today. And there's a lot going on here, but obviously one of the big stories is the rift in the GOP. We've been talking about this aspect of the story, or several aspects of this overall story, for several days, and that is, what do you do with a quote-unquote nutty House member, and how big is the rift in the GOP? So we spoke about this yesterday, but there were meetings that took place last night with Senate Minority Leader Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who met with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia to work on the great concern that many have within the party, and certainly without, of her comments that, again, have been called nutty, loony, and those words from Republicans. So what to do with her? And then, oh, by the way, what do you do with Liz Cheney, the number three House GOP leader who dared to vote against, who voted last month to impeach Donald Trump? So, and then the concern being, are you harsher on Liz Cheney than you are on Marjorie Taylor Greene? And this seems to be dividing many Republicans and is a source of great consternation. Now, the meeting took place yesterday, last night. It went very long, and we are told there will be another meeting today and some decision will be made. But it is interesting that this is taking so long. Alan, what can you read political tea leaves when it takes so such a long time to yank off the Band-Aid?
Yeah, I really can. I think I can. Look, they're in a hole, the Republicans. They have Trump, who individually is extraordinarily popular with his base. It's always been so. They're afraid of losing power. They're on their way out. And they don't know what to do, because if they vote with their own eyes, they were there when the hordes came into the Capitol. They're watching the past police officer who did his job and was killed for it. And yet they want to stay in office. It's that simple. So they vote not with their eyes, not with their hearts. They vote politically so that Trump won't come after them and give them a primary run for their money. It's that simple. There are times to stand up in America, and this is one of them. And these people will forever be seen as selling out their country and eschewing patriotism. And I want to hear what Rosemary has to say.
Rosemary, we want to hear what you have to say.
I don't know that there's anything simple about that, although much of what Alan says is correct. The difference between Cheney and Green, I think, is immense. One is saying nutty things, and everyone, even the Republicans, seem agreed that she's nutty. Liz Cheney is just saying things that some Republicans don't want said in public. That seems like a different offense. And she would not be expunged or taken off of a committee. She would just lose her leadership position. So the punishment's not exactly the same. This is a problem for the Republican Party because it is itself divided. There are many members who think both of those women are correct. So how do you reconcile it? Because there's nothing reconcilable between the two positions.
Anything? Okay, Chris Churchill, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with most of what has been said. I mean, Alan is exactly right that they are, a lot of the Republicans are in this kind of difficult spot where there's this group within their party that has been not only taken by Trump, but taken by things like QAnon and conspiracy theories and all sorts of things. And it's, I don't know how many people it is, but it's enough to sway a primary. And so they're afraid to alienate that group of people. But meanwhile, the party's just going to get killed in the suburbs if they don't kind of marginalize, you know, the conspiracy theories and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I mean, the mainstream of the country is going to continue to be repelled by this the way that they were repelled by the Capitol attack. You know, and Alan is right. The right thing to do is pretty clear. You marginalize, you say the conspiracy theories, you call them out for what they are, which is, you know, big lies. And you move on and maybe take your lumps in the next election. But, you know, politicians are never inclined to do that.
Bob Griffin.
Several thoughts. One, we haven't mentioned the fact that, as if I'm correct, Liz Cheney is the most senior female leader in the GOP, and I find it fascinating the way that the wing is going after her. But there's a pattern here. There's a pattern with the GOP and strong women that I think would be remiss if we didn't raise as an issue. When you start to think about Green, you have to be honest about the far right wing of the GOP party, because it's not just her. You know, you think about Gates, you think about Gohmert, you think about you can just go through the list. Frankly, I don't even understand how these people get elected to office. I mean, given their views and given their backgrounds and given their moral turpitudes, I frankly don't understand how they could be elected to any position. with that said, you know, Cheney stood up and voted the way she believed, and she showed a degree of political courage that frankly we have come to not expect from D.C. And I'm not a huge Liz Cheney fan, but at the same time, I admire the fact that she is willing to stand up and put the nation first. One note that I'll make, and it was a comment that it was reading Mitch McConnell's comment. You know, he talked about, you know, the loony wing and that the Republican Party can't handle this, that this isn't good for the Republican Party. But it just goes to show you, I mean, it's not good for the nation, and the nation should have been the first thing he talked about, not the Republican Party.
So go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, to Bob's point, the optics of punishing Liz Cheney for her vote of conscience and then basically accepting what Marjorie Taylor Greene is pitching, it would just be terrible. I mean, it's politically terrible for one thing, but more than that, it would be morally terrible.
And Joe, if I could jump in, you know, it's very interesting. What's developing right now is this weird defense about freedom of speech. And if we talk about, you know, the impeachment, you know, the argument that it's First Amendment rights and with Greene, it's her First Amendment rights. But what we start to see, though, is that it's not First Amendment rights for everybody. You know, there's an interesting article out of Florida where, you know, there was a dueling Black Lives Matters and Proud Boy demonstrations, and the Black Lives Matter people were arrested and the Proud Boys weren't. You know, so you're starting to see sort of a redefinition among the GOP of what really is a core freedom.
Well, that's a false argument anyway.
It's not a definition. It's just opportunism. It's just lawyers will get in there and use freedom of speech or narrow interpretations of the Constitution because it suits their very weak political case. We're seeing that in the impeachment brief that was turned in for Trump. That was his what he felt was true, even though it can't be provable. It wasn't a lie for him to say it, and he has the right to say it anyway. I mean, come on, that's not redefining a right. That's using a really stilted definition of a right that everyone is supposed to have.
Okay, let me push back respectfully.
Let Bob push back, and then I want to hear from Chris.
If the party accept this as a party norm, then it is a redefinition. Okay, the fact that the party, the Republican Party, the GOP, is not repudiating that position means that that's what they stand for. So it may be semantics, but it's a really important semantic.
Chris.
The point I was going to make is that, you know, the free speech argument to me is always dubious. I mean, nobody is saying that Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't have the right to say what she wants to say, but there have always been consequences for the things that people say. And there always will be. I mean, no one's saying the government should imprison her for the things she says. Nobody is saying that she doesn't have the right to say them, or at least most people aren't saying that. But it doesn't mean you can just say whatever you want and then continue to be a respected member of Congress. There are consequences for things that people say. There always have been, and there always should be.
Rosemary?
Well, yeah, I don't think they have any real thought or feeling or even care about a constitutional right to freedom of speech. I think it's a short-term political argument. And Bob is right, though. This is a matter of semantics. It will not be up to them and how this matter in Congress is resolved that will decide the First Amendment. That's something that's going to be hashed out by us, by courts, by groups like Black Lives Matter, who are all going to press freedom of speech to the hilt, as, you know, Marjorie Greene is.
Alan?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about what happens when all of this arrives at the Supreme Court, if it arrives at the Supreme Court. Spate of articles yesterday about Clarence Thomas's wife being a huge purveyor of Trumpism in the country. And, you know, we expect our Congress people to stand up. We expect the Republicans to stand up right now and to say this is just garbage. what this woman is doing. We have to kick her out. We have to do whatever we have to do. And yet, we have the same kinds of problems on the Supreme Court of the United States, which so far has been stepping up, doing what they should be doing for the most part when it comes to Trump. He's not the president anymore. I think they think they can. They know their own personal reputations are at stake, forever. It's to me, I just shake my head, gang, and say, how the heck did we get here? Yeah. How did we get a bunch of losers in the United States Congress who have forgotten their oath of office, who have forgotten the Constitution of the United States, and say that self-perpetuation is more important than any of that? It's really awful.
Bob?
Gerrymandering.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, gerrymandering. Yeah, that's how it happens.
It's a very long and sordid story if you really want to think about it. I mean, it's been manipulation of the districts. It's been a push to both wings, and this isn't just a GOP issue. I think this is a problem with the whole way the primaries are set up. Is that the primaries support positions that are more extreme because that's where the wings are, and the wings typically come out to vote. So there's an awful lot tied up in here. But Alan, you're onto something that, you know, sort of the noble following of public service is something that appears to be lost by many members of Congress. And it's time for the voters to continue what they started in November and staying involved and making sure that we're putting people into office and at all levels of government that really represent what we stand for.
I think the Republicans are concerned now about Green and Cheney and McConnell and impeachment. It's all looking for 2 years from now in the midterms. They have begun mobilizing and getting their ducks in a row. And the liberals, the Democrats, ought to be doing the same. There's no question. And as for the Supreme Court, it will be. I hope it does go to the Supreme Court, because there's nothing that has been as protected in the Constitution as far as a right for Americans and the right to political discourse. And these debates right now, Green and Trump inciting or not inciting, those are political discourse that affects people in a violent way. Those are cases we have not seen adjudicated before. I wish it were a different Supreme Court adjudicating it, but they will be extremely interesting. Originalists who should see the absolute nature of that First Amendment confronting an attack on the Capitol. That's just extraordinary.
All right. I have to. I take your sigh, Chris, and I will honor it as soon as we come back. I promise.
Go back to Chris.
Yeah. We'll go back to Chris when we come back. I remind you, you can write to us, panel@wamc.org. A lot here, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. Chris, you're up.
Yeah, first I got to stop sighing. I'm sorry about that. I'm never aware of how audible, how much you guys are aware of them. But
it's better than snoring. That's fine. Sighing's fine.
Yeah, yeah. I somewhat forget what I was going to say. I think I was going to ask Rosemary what I'm not clear what constitutional questions the Supreme Court would decide in all this. I mean, I know that there's the thing that they're likely to hear is whether or not you can impeach somebody or convict somebody once they've left office. That might go to the Supreme Court, but none of these other questions. I mean, there's really no constitutional. These are just political questions, or am I missing something?
Well, one of the problems is that you're asking a question to someone whose phone line just dropped out. So yeah. We will. But if Bob wants to answer them, that's fine.
If I could, because it's really interesting, Chris, and I like your perspective and Alan's perspective.
Wait a second. Are you answering as Bob or answering as Rosemary?
I think
I just want to be clear.
Rosemary is here, but go ahead.
Did you hear Chris's question to you?
No, but I'll figure it out when I hear Bob support him. So this is shaping into an argument of several against one. So that's okay.
That's how I feel.
If it's us against you, we lose. So I'm not even going to go there. You know, it's this really interesting argument that I, that I think, yeah, I listen, I absolutely, that I do think could end up in the Supreme Court. And it's this argument that the president can't be charged because he's no longer president, right? And that the impeachment is because constitutional issues. So if that's the case, could he be charged as a private citizen for sedition?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, we talked about that on the roundtable the other day. That is indeed an interesting issue. Mm-hmm. And it would require not only probably a ruling by the Supreme Court, but a prosecutor game enough to try a criminal charge against an ex-president in the face of a new administration that does not want to go backward. But that's not the constitutional issue I was talking about. I wanted to talk about free speech, which has not been, or freedom of the press, freedom of speech. This has not been before the Supreme Court in quite some time. But established precedent is so strong in favor of political discourse. This court, over the years, not just any one court, not the Trump court, but all the courts, have strongly ruled that people in America are mostly allowed to say whatever they want about their government. They've even dumbed down and weakened hate speech, saying that, no, unless you actually have a clear danger, you can even say hateful things in the name of political discourse. So here, if they went and this free speech of the president, his First Amendment rights, or Greens, is adjudicated, it would be really interesting because it's both a clear and present danger, you could argue, and a violation of their First Amendment rights to shut them up. So that's what I'm talking about. It's all hypothetical at this point, of course.
So, Chris, did that answer the question you were asking?
Yeah, somewhat, although I just don't see how that would end up before the Supreme Court exactly, because they're not being – no one's prosecuting these people for the things that they said. These aren't constitutional questions yet. These are just political questions. I mean, whether or not she should be censored by the House or kicked off committees or all these various things, these are just political. The government has not taken Green into custody for the things she said or Trump or anybody else. I don't see the constitutional issue here.
You know, there's a big difference between
the
Trump case.
Her lawyers could certainly argue that. Her lawyers could certainly argue that. But if she is censored or if the president is punished because of what he said, that's certainly an action taken against them for political speech. And it could at least be raised as a possible case for the Supreme Court. I don't think there's anything that requires that the punishment be, imprisonment.
The punishment's only going to be a conviction for impeachment. And sorry.
Go ahead, Alan.
Okay. No, Chris first. I'll do it then. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, Congress people have been punished for the things they say forever. I mean, Ilhan Omar was censored not too long ago for things that she said. I mean, that there's nothing new about that. And, if Trump is convicted on this impeachment trial for what he said, I kind of lost my train of thought a little bit on this, but that's a political process. It's not the government silencing anybody.
Alan?
The real
issue.
Rosemary, let Alan, I'm going to let Alan go.
Let her go.
All right, go ahead.
I just want to say one thing. I mean, this is moot because impeachment cannot be appealed. That's a final decision. So if they impeach him, I guess the reasoning doesn't really matter. They can't take that anyplace else.
Alan.
Well, we're going to get 14 letters in 5 seconds. Don't you people know the difference between impeachment and conviction? Come on, lighten up, please, everybody. No, the point is that there's a big difference between Green and Trump. Hmm. Because Trump, of course, was the president. We come down to this idea that Trump could have incited a mob the day before he left and not been responsible, or anything that he had done, and not be held responsible. So there is a constitutional question, and there's a question what the originalists on the Supreme Court think and what the Supreme Court of the United States thinks. I think that's going to be a tough row for them.
We have a ton of letters, so I want to get to as many as we can here before we break in just a few minutes. We go to Denise, who says, freedom of speech, my eye. I wonder what the families of those lost at Parkland and Sandy Hook think of Mad Magazine's freedom of speech now that their family members' voices have been lost forever. Bill says the problem is not that Marjorie Taylor Greene is simply nutty. The problem is that she is filled with hate and will believe literally anything about people or groups that she hates. Kathleen says, can Justice Roberts encourage or take stronger action that Clarence Thomas recuse himself from any case involving Trump, given his wife's MAGA activities and incitement? And then will he? Question mark.
No.
We go to Marty. Can we please stop saying the GOP is divided? 45 GOP senators just voted to say Trump cannot be convicted because he is out of office. Only 10 GOP representatives voted to impeach him, but over 100 voted against certifying the election. Stating the party is divided gives the impression that there is a sizable wing that opposes Trump, when in reality, it is just a handful.
Great letter. I thought it over and over again. Great letter.
Shane says, I'm tired of Republicans claiming their First Amendment rights are being denied when people speak out against their lies and racism. That is not censorship. It is democracy and capitalism in action. Russ says, Biden's executive orders have thrown down the gauntlet in the face of the vast disaffected minority who believe a shadowy cabal stuffed the ballot boxes last November. Their worst fears on immigration and abortion now realize they are ready to settle down and gerrymander the future in their favor, while the Republican Party cements a unified platform to appeal to single-issue voters and nostalgic chauvinists. The Democrats are in for a fight.
Yeah, I think that the letter writer is correct, that the Democrats are in for a fight, and there's going to be a continued fight for the soul of America. And the gerrymandering is just simply a piece of it. But if people thought that they could just vote in the last presidential election and not show up again to the next one, I think they're really missing how important the sub-elections are. This is going to be big money. It's going to be... It's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight for what the future is going to be.
Lynn writes and says, I expect absolutely nothing to happen with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and sadly, this suburban housewife expects to see more and more and more of these types of people serving. We are in a new re-emboldened era. We are heading in a dangerous direction, even with Biden at the helm, because of the brainwashed cult portion of this nation. If anything, Cheney will be the woman reprimanded, because this is where the Republican Party is at the moment, and has been for quite a while now. Angry desperados and the party of screaming loudly, saying no to good things yet to immoral things, and the party of hate. Boy, I would so love to be wrong at this point. Vinny writes to us and says, go ahead, Bob.
I hope she's wrong, but I agree with a lot of what the letter writer just said. I have, as I've pondered our whole situation right now, I hearken back to, my history lessons, and I always wondered growing up, looking at the atrocities from World War II, how could that have happened? How could that be allowed to have happened? And unfortunately, I'm seeing sort of a redo right now in our own country, where I'm looking at a much larger proportion than I ever imagined, willing to give up every tenet that created this country, our basic freedoms, the freedom of election, the freedom to disagree, in support of a would-be tyrant. This is the letter writer is really spot on.
How big do you think that group is, Bob?
It's scaring me now. I mean, typically
10%?
Typically I would say that the crazy wings are about 10%, but then I'm looking at who's getting elected and where, and I think in some areas it's much, much higher than that.
We'll go to Vinny, who says, when will liberals realize that the GOP doesn't care about doing the right thing and that they only care about holding political power? As long as people like Marjorie Taylor Greene keep getting elected by their constituents, they will support them full-heartedly. Then, to Mike, it's really quite simple. Republicans of all stripes are at least tacitly okay with racism, sexism, the various isms in favor of party politics. Anecdotally, writes Marie, a good number of my Republican friends have left the party and enrolled in other parties. Do we have any numbers on how many voters remain in the Republican Party? How many Republicans have changed party enrollment? When we hear statistics like 40% of Republicans are in favor of X, how many people actually is that as compared with 40% of Democrats unenrolled, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Everything I've seen is anecdotal where, you know, people are switching parties. But to go back and dig through those records is that would be really valuable research. Let me toss this out from the last couple of letters, Joe. I mean, one of my questions that I struggle with is, what is so bad in folks' lives that they're so afraid that they're willing to accept some of these absolute extreme positions that go against, you know, every sense of decency? I mean, what has happened to the country that there are whole swaths of our community that seem like they are so disaffected? I'm struggling with that. This is a great country, and we offer all sorts of services, and I don't understand it.
Rosemary?
We know some of the answer to that. We have a mysterious disease that's sweeping across the entire world. We have bombings coming out of the sky starting in 2002. We never know where it's going to hit again. We don't really understand a lot of the thinking in other countries because we haven't learned about them. There's economic uncertainty because the economy is changing. There's computers. God, they're scary if you're from a different generation. Everything is changing. We're shifting from an industrial age into an information age. It's very dislocating. It's happened before when the industrial age came in from the pre-literate age. And we're in the same sort of thing now. So it's very sweeping, and it affects everyone. And it allows politicians like Trump and McConnell to play off of fears.
See, I see it a little bit
to blame other people.
And a lot of people are being left behind. I mean, what you're talking about essentially is globalization. I mean, there are other issues in there too, the coronavirus, but you know, there are a lot of people who have been left behind by globalization, and it does make it easier to appeal to fears and anger when people's concerns do go unaddressed for decades.
Alan,
I see it a little differently. I think, and I've said it again and again, and I still think it's so. There was a majority in this country. It was made up of white people, people who had money, people who didn't. They were the superior class. Along comes the inevitable, which is that people are brown and black and poor get together. Martin Luther King used to talk about it all the time. Now they're the majority, and it scares the whatever out of that former majority. I think that's what's going on. You can look at it any other way, but that's why these people are so scared.
All right.
Do you think that COVID magnified it? Because part of me says that this would still have happened even without COVID.
I would agree with that.
No, I think it magnified it. I think people are inside more. I think they're online more. I think a virus like this, where people are being told to do things that they don't necessarily understand, I do think it feeds a lot of conspiracy theories. I think it really amplified QAnon and amplified a lot of the other kind of fringe arguments that are being made. You know, and to go back to an earlier question, somebody asked about is there any tangible evidence of the Republican Party getting smaller? I think there is. I mean, if you look at suburbs around the Albany area, like places like Half Moon that have been Republican forever, Trump lost those places, and you can see that same trend all around the country. There has been a migration of the kind of center right people away from the party, and if you're a Republican, that should terrify you. I mean, that should be in the back of their minds as they debate what to do with Liz Cheney, who would have a lot of appeal in places like Half Moon, and, you know, somebody like Liz Green, who would probably repel suburban voters, or at least I would like to think that she would.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will return to this. We have more letters, and we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your thoughts. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo picking up the panel. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's very nice to have you with us. All right. We
Joe, before you go on, I love this music, but it just reminds me what a dork I was in the 70s. So.
Well,
in the 70s?
Yeah, thank God it hasn't held over.
That's just, I'm just a fatter dork now.
All right, let's go to letters. And we go to Alan, who says, if not convicted in an impeachment proceeding, what are the odds that Washington, D.C. officials could charge the ex-president with incitement to riot, presumably a felony? Anyone?
Yeah, I don't know what the odds would be. The case would probably be a little bit thin. I mean, even if they could, would they actually do it? I don't know. It doesn't seem likely to me.
And that's going to get into a question of jurisdiction as well.
Right.
The local government, actually, the city of D.C. is almost powerless, given that all of the rights are within the federal government.
Mary writes, Taylor Greene was elected because her threats and those of her supporters scared her Democratic opponent into dropping out of the race. At least she didn't poison him or send him to Siberia as Putin would have done.
Well, that's positive.
Well, we got that going for us, don't we?
Yeah, and you thought things were bad.
Right.
Kathleen writes,
just Mussolini, not Pol Pot, right? Okay. Oh, good. Yeah.
If Liz Cheney had known in advance what the backlash would she have had the courage to do the right thing? I'm not so sure. Oh, she had to have known what the backlash was going to be.
Right? I'm thinking so. Look, Liz Cheney takes us back to the Bush administrations. The Bush party, part of the Republican Party, hates his guts, hates Trump's guts. And her father was the vice president under a Bush. So I don't think there's any question she knew that she was doing something that was principled, and history will treat her kindly for it.
Kathleen goes on to write in that letter, says, with her father as a role.
Cheney spent time under a Bush. Sorry, that was just a great wording, Alan, about Cheney being under a Bush. Yeah, that's so true.
Oh, yeah, I see a point.
It's disturbing. Okay. Kathleen goes on in that letter and says, with her father as a role model, I can't help but think her ethics might be questionable. So then there is this letter from Neil, who says Congress is concerned with Marjorie Taylor Greene and is considering removing her from her committee assignments. Can she be impeached? Many Republicans have expressed outrage with her. Well, if they can't get her taken off the committees, I doubt they're going to be able to impeach her, right?
Well, they're going to throw her. Look, as I keep pointing out, they can do whatever they want. You know, they've done Adam Clayton Powell. They've done in the past, and the Supreme Court slapped them on the hand for that. So, in terms of his rights, I think this is going to happen. They are in a bad spot, and they're going to have to do something to discipline her because her stuff is so loony. That simple.
Well, the question is, do the Republicans do it or the Democrats do it? Right? I mean, that's the quandary.
Well, I think it's going to be a combination, right? I mean, it has to be the Democrats plus the Republicans. Look, the Democrats are in the catbird seat right now. They're looking at this lunatic who says that those kids didn't get murdered and says the planes never hit the Pentagon and who says all that stuff. She's loony. And the Democrats sit there and watch as the Republicans get destroyed, because they are.
Except, you know, this actually works really well for the GOP right now, if you think about it. I mean, I would much rather, if I was an operative, I would much rather be holding up the question of Greene's rights to her opinion rather than talking about the dead police officers or sedition. In some respects, it's taking away, I think, from the bigger problem.
I'd like a chance to answer that.
Yes, go ahead.
Huh?
So that was a question.
Yeah. You answered with a question.
Think about it though, Alan. I mean, you've got this terrible situation, right? With sedition and impeachment and dead police officers and lots of moral outrage. So all of a sudden, you have this crazy woman from Georgia, who's taken the spotlight away from that.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Bob. I mean, these two things are so intertwined. The through line of craziness runs through both stories. And I don't know the Republicans want her held up as an example of what they represent. I mean, they're looking and hoping to win back the House in 2022, and somebody like her will just really damage those chances.
If that's true, Chris, why did McCarthy put her on those very prominent committees?
Well, because you answered your own question yesterday. You said McCarthy is a very confused fellow. Is that right? And a very weak fellow.
That's right. He's weak. He's weak and pathetic.
And he wanted to keep his Trumpers in line, but he is also getting it right in the neck right now, Rosemary. So I think that's the answer. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I think
there's a lot to be. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the craziness from her continues to. I mean, he. Every day it's another revelation. It gets worse and worse and worse. I'm not sure how much he knew. I mean, everyone has known for a long time that she's QAnon sympathetic at least. But, you know, the stuff about lasers starting the wildfires and all that kind of stuff just seems
matzo
to be.
Balls.
What's that?
Matzo balls from space. You don't remember that one? Yeah. Okay. I mean, she is on top of everything else an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Alan, I'm taking it you don't believe the laser started the wildfires? Is that? we should go around the panel and go and get everybody on record on that one.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be good to have a baseline for our future conversations. Two more letters, and then I'm going to then we'll take a break here. Jim says everyone is entitled to freedom of speech. However, if any law is broken when you exercise this freedom, you must pay the price. Sure, you can run into a crowded theater and yell fire, but you will pay a price. If you incite a riot by your speech, you should pay. Also, we go to Marty, who says, we go to Edgar, who says, what's scarier than Ms. Green is the fact that her district felt she was the best person for the job.
Talk about it, 73 million people who voted for Trump?
Right. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Laura writes to us and says, phew. Talk about insane Trump supporters. Did any of the panel see the clip of the Newsmax guy interviewing the MyPillow CEO? MyPillow just kept spewing unfounded election fraud, presenting no proof. The Newsmax interviewer walked off the screen. Fun to watch, but the lies and insanity are unsettling.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
I was going to say, I would like to think that was because of his great news value and care about the truth. But the fact of the matter is that the MyPillow guy was going off on Dominion machinery, and Dominion has threatened to sue Newsmax if they keep on talking that way. So that was a matter of the liability for the station. He had to shut him up. It was insane, though, watching it.
Well, and him getting up and leaving was interesting, but also there's the fact that, like, what do you expect when you get the MyPillow guy on? Like, anyone who has viewed him and watched him for more than 30 seconds should know what they're getting themselves into.
Well, and Newsmax built this situation for themselves, right? I mean, they promoted those lies for 6 weeks, and then all suddenly they're going in a 180-degree direction. But I hope you never do that to us, Joe.
No, what, get up and leave? No. Well, first of all, in this situation, you'd never know.
I know.
Joe, where are you, Joe? Joe? I keep wondering about what's happened to sales of those pillows.
A lot of stores have kicked them out of the, have taken them off the shelves. They've lost a lot of big contracts, but he was also doing mail order. I don't know. I'm sure it helps in some segments of the business, but you know, I got one for the holidays a year ago, and I had to take it back just on principle.
Way to go.
And tell the person that gave it to me that I wasn't accepting it because of that reason. And it was awkward, but I felt necessary. We go to Robin, who says, to the question whether it was COVID that exacerbated the fears of many Republicans and extremists, I think it was Trump who exacerbated their fears for the past 4 years, and the COVID lockdown provided perfect fertile ground. Trump is the one who pushed the issue to the absolute deadly edge. There is no mistaking that. Thank you for providing a dose of sanity along with lots of deep breathing. Your panel is a breath.
Yeah.
Your panel is a breath of fresh air for my spirit.
I noticed that Bob does a fair amount of sighing too. Now that I'm
now that you're tuned into it,
yeah,
you don't feel as bad.
Am I the cause of the sighing?
No,
not the
reason. Usually, I'm just taking a deep breath so I can go on a long rant. But then it's not really a statement on what's being said. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just. I think it's our culture and society we are living in is providing most of the sighs. We're just very exhausted by all this.
Although, you know, it's a little bit inside baseball, but one of the things that I do miss about not being in studio is that I could pick up the cues when somebody wanted to jump in. And right now, the only cue I could pick up is when I hear somebody sort of sigh. I'm like, okay, I know somebody's going to jump in. So, so folks that are home, like,
I have a big problem with that.
We take what we...
I just demonstrated it.
We take what we
Rosemary, get. You're off mic. I don't know why, but if you could get closer to wherever you're talking to, it would be great.
Is that better?
I'm having
trouble because of the noise in the house trying to find a good place. I have to just hold it right up to my mouth. But I agree with Chris. It's, many people write in and say, oh, you're so rude to each other. But I have a terrible time hearing it and figuring out when I should talk or not. And the hosts of the programs can't always say, now you speak, now you speak. That's very difficult. I do have a new appreciation for your job, Joe.
Well, you all do fine, and we get through this as far as that's one of the new wrinkles of broadcasting this way. But we're not being rude to one another. It's just hard to know when the other person has something on their mind. With that said, I want to get to what Robin has on their mind, to the question whether it was COVID that exacerbated the fears of many Republicans and extremists. I think it was Trump who exacerbated their fears. Did I read this one already? I think I did.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So let's go on to other topics if we can. The what do you make of Jeff Bezos stepping down as Amazon CEO? The chief of Amazon's cloud computing division, Andy Jassy, will become chief executive, while Bezos, the company's founder, will become executive chairman. When Jeff Bezos founded an online bookseller named Amazon in 1994, he said the question that he was asked most frequently was, "What's the internet?" Mr. Bezos answered by building Amazon into a $1.7 trillion behemoth that sold so many different items online it became known as the Everything Store. In the process, he upended the retail industry, turned Amazon into a logistics giant, and expanded into cloud computing, streaming entertainment, and artificial intelligence-powered devices. For a time, he was the world's richest person. On Tuesday, he said his run at the top of the Seattle-based company was over. As Amazon reported its latest set of blockbuster financial results, Bezos said he planned to hand over the reins this summer and transition into the role of executive chairman. Jassy, who is 53, the chief executive of Amazon's cloud computing division, will be promoted to run the entire company. The change will be effective in the third quarter, which starts in July. So I keep looking for something here. Is there a reason? Is there a reason? Is it just that the guy said it's time for somebody else? I don't know.
I don't think it is time for somebody else. I think what's happening is Bezos is still going to be calling the shots, the major shots. But he's turning over the day-to-day operation of the company to a trusted ally. You can't believe for a second that guy isn't going to do everything that Jeff Bezos wants or isn't checking in with him, can you?
No. Alan? Or Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, it could just be people do get bored. They want different challenges. But
Alan is probably right that, you know, Bezos is probably going to have a pretty substantial voice in the company. I don't think anyone thinks otherwise.
I'm tired of taking over the world. I'm tired of this domination. I'm bored. Yeah. Let someone else do it.
Everything gets boring after a while. I don't know.
Bob?
The internet is rife with speculation.
Yeah, and what are they saying?
What the real reason is. And nothing really sticks. Amazon is facing some legal problems, but the guy's got more money than God. He can hire every bit of legal talent and bribe judges, and I don't think that's the reason.
We're not saying he's going to bribe judges, by the way.
Example of Bill Gates. Pardon me?
I said we're not saying he's going to bribe judges, by the way.
No. But he has enough money that he could if he wanted to make some really good bribes. But at any rate, I think he's following in the example of Bill Gates, who also walked away at the very top of his game to do something completely different. And Bezos has already had a history of this. He dabbled in journalism. He's interested in cloud development, iCloud development. So, he could do anything. So why should he just stick there, you know, in Seattle and that incredible complex he has when he can still exercise control and then go play around the world?
Bob?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I don't think there's any sort of sense of maliciousness. I think he's run his course. He's going out on top, which is, you know, which is absolutely admirable. I'll note we've sort of taken some pot shots at Amazon, but I mean, I love it. And I try to shop local to support the local merchants. But at the same time, I do keep an eye on Amazon to make sure that I'm sort of within range. He fundamentally changed the way we shopped. And his sense of timing, whether it was luck or skill, is kind of amazing if you think about it. I thought when he bought Whole Foods that he made a giant mistake. And of course, you know, that's turned out to be such a boom given COVID. Right. It'd be interesting to see, you know, somebody raised the interesting point about Gates, and I would love to see him start to get into some of the philanthropy that the Gates have been involved in.
Well, he did. He got divorced, and his wife is using the half of his fortune that he made to give to charity. You know,
that's not quite what I'm talking about. But
opening
yeah.
in the Capital District this week.
I'm sorry, what?
An Amazon retail store is opening at Crossgate in the Capital District this week. So it's moving into a new area now that it's wiped out a lot of retailers. Amazon is itself going into retail. But I've maintained all along that its success is not due so much to nefariousness, is that they just simply do it better than anybody else. It's cheaper, which is the part where it's sneaky. But go into a local store and try to find something. You have to deal with surly salespeople who usually say, "We don't have it. Look online." So, I mean, he's gotten a push in his success.
Yeah, I mean, that's partly true, Rosemary, and I certainly have mixed feelings about Amazon. I mean, on the one hand, especially during the pandemic, they provide an amazing service that we should be, that I'm grateful for sometimes. On the other hand, though, I mean, they don't just do it because they're better than everybody else. They also get massive tax breaks and all sorts of government help. I mean, it's not, they have managed to make the playing field uneven. And I think, you know, Bezos has played a big role in doing that. This is a company that gets massive government contracts and gets massive government handouts and doesn't pay the kind of taxes that it should pay. It doesn't pay its workers what it should pay them. I mean, Bezos's record is mixed at best.
Mm.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I tend to give him a lot of credit and forgive him because he bought the Washington Post and pumped a billion into it and has done some of the best investigative reporting ever. So I tend to be less evil towards him than I should be. So that's a good point.
I'm sorry for this, Rosemary, but I remember walking down the street in Fire Island. Did you want to react to that?
yeah.
And having some little guy next to me say,
Babe Ruth wasn't as good as they say he was, and Joe DiMaggio really does stink, and the rest of it. It's very easy to pick on these guys who are major players and major winners, and I can't believe there's anybody listening to this who hasn't used, well, I know that somebody will write and say, I don't, but Amazon is really incredible. As you say, it's a service that has really revolutionized everything.
I just lament not getting into cardboard boxes back in the day. I couldn't. Yeah. I can't replicate Amazon, but maybe I could do cardboard boxes because there's a lot of those boxes.
There sure are. Bob writes, Alan, you are totally right about the racism behind politics, and thank you for repeating it so often. One of the civil rights leaders, whose names I cannot recall, who walked with MLK, said something like this. White people need to learn to share what they thought was only theirs. Jude says, Jeff Bezos aiming for other planets while Amazon fights against workers attempting to unionize and secure themselves in the packing plants. That is one of the things that you were alluding to, I believe, Rosemary, when you were saying that. Well, I think Rosemary was saying that there was...
Chris did that. Okay. He's right. He's right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
No, it is... He has
I meant by your...
And he,
I'm, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. It's the, we all have said it. It's a mixed bag. He has great, brilliant, visionary ideas. And he also has so much money, he could fix all the relatively small problems we're talking about, like paying his factory workers and making sure they're safe. These should not be problems for Amazon. And they are. So Chris's criticism is correct.
Yeah, it's also important to remember that the issues with workers are not just about pay. I mean, those warehouses are widely considered very dehumanizing places to work, where your every move is tracked and watched, and you know you're basically turned into a human robot. There's a big negative to Amazon, and you know they also are into all sorts of kind of government defense department work that I think people might have moral qualms about. Amazon has its tentacles in a lot of different things. I mean, we can all appreciate having the laundry detergent shipped to our homes when we want it, and that is an amazing service. But there, Amazon is a complicated company.
Mickey Mantle wasn't that good.
Yeah, okay. Why were people walking up to you in Fire Island and talking about the proclivities of baseball players?
Because everybody wants to put down the guys who are doing well or who are doing, that's the whole point here.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to this, if we may. And that is the story about the immigration agenda of Joe Biden. And talking about this for a moment,
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. Well, ever since I updated, sometimes it wants my fingerprint so I can go to a story. Here we go. Biden issues. Any thoughts on that, Bob? Biden issues.
We know where you are, Joe.
Biden issues orders to dismantle Trump's America First immigration agenda. Officials and immigration advocates say the orders, which aim to reunite separated migrant families and review the former president's actions, will broadly reshape policy, but not immediately. President Biden moved cautiously on Tuesday to confront the most intractable immigration issues that his predecessor left behind, reuniting migrant children separated from their families, rebuilding a working asylum system, and restoring opportunities for foreign workers and students to enter the country. A trio of executive orders signed on Tuesday reflect a reimagining of America's place in the world after 4 years of Mr. Trump's America First vision, but administration officials and immigration advocates cautioned that will not happen immediately. Mr. Biden's government is wary of flinging open the border until it has rebuilt an asylum and refugee system that can process potentially large influxes of people. With thousands of migrants already living in squalor on the Mexican side of the border, a crisis could develop quickly, and that would be a nightmare for the new president this early in his term. And the effort to locate parents and children separated in the summer of 2018 will take months, if not years. Rosemary?
Well, it's I so applaud Biden. This is one of the reasons that I voted and supported him, that he's undoing the terrible policies in immigration that the Trump administration brought in. It's been very interesting to read about them. The New Yorker had a great piece on this, that the Biden people, they had a lousy transition and they're following a really immoral administration, doesn't even know the extent of the changes that were made. They were below the level of law. They were just in policies and plans and regulations within agencies. So one of the things he did was put out a directive that in every department that deals with immigrants, they have to comb through to see what changes were made. And that's what they're undoing. I think it's remarkable. And it also the problem of trying to put the kids back together with their parents, it's hard to believe how scrambled that is and that it could take years, which is deliberate child abuse. And America has to make that right. I want to see comprehensive immigration reform, but at the very least, those parents need to be reunited with their children and allowed to stay in the United States with a path towards citizenship. And that will be a huge political fight. And Biden is trying to do this at the same time that he's dealing with COVID. So the pressure is enormous. The stakes are high and the cause is noble.
Bob?
Oh, boy, there's several issues here. One concern that I have is what I'm concerned about, the overreach of executive orders. I thought Trump had too many executive orders. I worry that Biden may have too many executive orders. But I understand that this is just a reflection of the weakness and impotence of Congress right now. But as a policy position, I do worry that the executive gets more and more authorities with these executive orders. With that said, there are a couple other issues I'll put on the table. One is that, you know, the reference to the separation of children from their families, I thought was so powerful, where he called it undoing, when I say he being Biden, right, undo the moral and national shame. It is an absolute moral and national shame. And the fact that he addresses it and isn't trying to sugarcoat it, I think, is really important. Now we're getting into the problem of how do you carry it out? And I was extremely critical of how slow the transition process was going, that folks weren't read in. And this is exactly why I was pushing for more transition work. Right now, DHS is fundamentally still being run by Trump and Trump's organization. If you think about it, it's mostly his appointees or his supporters who are in acting positions, because right now only one person has been confirmed, and that was yesterday, and that's the secretary. Biden and the administration really needs to start putting their own people in and get a control over the organizations. If you haven't seen the article on ICE, you should. You see about a contract that was written the last day of the administration by Ken Cuccinelli, basically in a very perverse way, giving more power to the union, but at the same time giving the union the ability to really throw the sort of the monkey wrench into efforts to change our immigration position. I've said before, and I'll say again, I believe ICE is a feral organization, and that it really has to send teams in there to figure out what can be cleaned up or what needs to be put down. Doesn't mean the jobs go away. I think the jobs could be done by others, but there's an awful lot of work at DHS that is not getting done right now because the horsepower is just not there to move it.
Chris?
So child separation was a unique moral horror, and everything that Biden does to unwind that and put those families back together is a great thing. And I don't take issue with anything that he did yesterday. I mean, I think by and large, kudos to him for those executive orders. I do, however, take a little bit of exception to him saying that this is only a problem of the last 4 years, and that somehow our immigration policy, he makes it sound as if everything was wonderful under the Obama administration, and that's clearly not true. I mean, Obama deported more people than Trump ever did on a yearly basis. There were more ICE arrests under Obama than than Trump. And Biden has never really answered for that. He's been called, you know, during the Democratic primaries, there would occasionally be questions or jabs from some of the other candidates about the Obama administration's policy in immigration, which was frankly pretty awful in a lot of ways. It wasn't as bad as Trump, but there was the child separation policy wasn't in place like it was under Trump. But, you know, for Biden to act like this is just a moral stain from the last 4 years, I think is messing with the historical record a little bit too much.
And there's another issue here. And that is that Trump, of course, who really could not go lower, really understood that the American people want to close the hatches. And that's terrible. Now, Biden is playing to their better side, which is wonderful. Nevertheless, Trump thought he knew what he was doing, which was playing to the fears of Americans that their people were going to take their jobs, they were going to come in, the border should be closed.
Yeah, all that's true, but why do you think Obama did many of the same things?
No. Two wrongs don't make a right, Chris. We all know that. But the issue here is why these presidents think that an anti-immigration policy, or as you say, deporting all those people from Obama, is good politics.
Hmm. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like every deportation is the wrong thing to do. There are justifiable.
I'm sorry. What?
Cases.
What?
What happened?
I don't know.
Rosemary's sighing. She wants to get recognized.
Oh, sigh. I thought you were saying. I thought you were saying bye.
Yeah, I thought you were.
Go.
Yeah, I thought you were ticked off. Saying,
walking off the set like that Newsmax guy. Right.
Okay. Well,
I'm done.
We only have 48 seconds. So, Chris, finish your thought.
No, I'm done. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Okay, Rosemary, you have 43 seconds.
She can't
okay,
do it.
I just want to say that Biden, while he is doing executive orders, which is not a great and permanent way to deal with immigration, is also taking other steps. He has already put in a proposal about widespread immigration reform. Congress doesn't know when they're going to deal with it. And he also has talked to Mexico and other South American countries about what they can do to alleviate conditions, which is the real, absolute way to deal with the immigration problems. And no one has tackled that, not anybody backed as far as Reagan has tackled that we know of. So he does see the big picture. Whether he can do anything about it is something else.
All right. We will pause there. When we come back, we will have our last go-round with our panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo are making up the group. We do, as always, welcome your letters. We have many to get to, but we, you know, join the party. We have time for more. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this break. Last call for a roundtable panel on this Wednesday morning, the 3rd of February. We have some letters, sort of a mishmash about everything that we've talked about this morning. So we'll go through and try to get the record cleared up here. Diane said, "Your the immigration thoughts by Rosemary moved me so much. We need to make this atrocious policy by Trump. Right. We owe the families and the children citizenship, a good education, and psychological therapy." We go to Jim. "The current occupant of the Oval Office is, in fact, an authoritarian because he is covering by executive fiat, which provides the people no representation." Anyone on that? All right, Mary said.
I think it does raise questions about executive orders, but so much was being done through the executive agencies without the power of law behind it. That this is one of the few ways that he can clean up some of the policies that were put in place. So again, two rights don't make a wrong, and I think executive orders are something we need to take a hard look at. At the same time, though, I wouldn't go so far as to say that Joe Biden's acting like an authoritarian at this point in time.
You know, it's funny, when Trump was the president, I agreed with the letter writer. Now it's a little different.
Yeah.
And the reason is that when you say no representation, the representation is the last election we had. in which Trump lost and Biden won. And Trump had put out all of these executive orders, and Biden was saying nothing doing, and changed them all back, or many of them back. So the election was the representation, I think.
So, great point. Here is a question from Mary, who says, why is Lindsey Graham still in a position of power to block a hearing on Merrick Garland?
The rules of the Senate. I mean, it's a split Senate. It's a shared process, and he has seniority, and the Senate is all about seniority.
Yeah, and they're looking at the kind of pushback they're getting as a result of Merrick Garland. If he's good enough for this job, then why wasn't he good enough to go on to the Supreme Court? And I'm sure part of what Lindsey is doing is looking at that proposition.
Rosemary, any thoughts? You're usually good for a comment on Lindsey Graham.
Oh, boy, Lindsey Graham. I have many thoughts on him. Most of them I cannot utter on radio. Yeah, he still has a lot of power, and I don't think he has a history, however, and it has made a boast of how he believes presidents should have the team that they want, and he's always supported other people. And so I'm hoping that this will go away in the same way that objections to the Homeland Security chief went away and he was confirmed. So far, Biden has gotten some key players in, including Austin. Remember, that was an issue, too, and he's gotten them in without difficulty. So I'm not ready to judge him yet, but, boy, is he capable of perfidy? Yes, he certainly is.
Doug writes to us and says, as a small retailer, this is about Jeff Bezos and business. Doug says, as a small retailer that is succeeding with selection, service, and polite knowledgeability, I resent the broad brush with which you paint local retail. In retail, as in life, you often get what you give. All right. I don't think any of us disagree with that, but go ahead.
And again, just another pitch. If you have an opportunity to buy local, you're helping yourself. You're helping, you know, your neighbors, and you're strengthening your community at the same time. So whenever possible, you know, try to buy local.
Let's see. We have about 10 minutes, so let's go to a new topic since we have time for it. We'll talk about COVID for a moment or two. We had two big headlines on the COVID front yesterday. One is that the U.S. is going to start distributing coronavirus vaccines directly to pharmacies. So often in these questions and these significant developments, I was like, oh, wow, they weren't doing that already? That is interesting to me. But it will start distributing limited supplies of vaccines directly to retail pharmacies beginning February 11th. In effort to make it faster and easier for people to get inoculated, these doses are separate from those allocated to states. So that is the good news. Jeff Zients, Biden's coronavirus coordinator, cautioned that supply constraints will limit the early availability of shots in drugstores. He said the administration wanted to target supplies to pharmacies serving, quote, socially vulnerable communities. Also, we want to report to you on fact that the U.S. response to variants emphasizes that masks and vaccines work instead of lockdowns. As America faces the potential for catastrophic coronavirus spikes fueled by highly infectious variants, public health authorities remain wary of imposing the stricter measures adopted by other nations and said they continue to embrace a stick-to-the-basic strategy, wear a mask, maybe even two, avoid large crowds, and get vaccinated fast. I will add this editorially, if you can.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. You know, Joe, only right now 1.8% of the population has been fully vaccinated. So, I mean, we have a really long way to go. One pushback is that, you know, we talked about, you know, socially vulnerable populations. Well, guess what? CVS and Walmart and these stores who will be receiving these vaccinations aren't serving the socially vulnerable populations
exactly.
In many parts of the country, which means that the health disparity problems that have been identified in COVID are going to continue to be exacerbated. So I hope that there are other plans to overcome some of the those barriers. I do question, though, you know, given how fragile some of the vaccinations are, if you think about the care that have got to go in, the temperatures and stuff, I question whether most local pharmacies have the capacity to do this. I'd love it if they could. I mean, if you think about flu shots and how that's become so commonly available, I'd love to see that. But I think there are a lot of questions here.
And we can make it personal. I got to tell you, we have there's a big CVS up in Lenox, big store. They may be able to do it, but our little CVS here in Great Barrington, I don't know that it'll ever happen. And they can't handle the people who are online now just to pick up their drugs, let alone doing these injections.
Well, that's right. And so many of these, and also these programs come out. I mean, there was a story last night about these large vaccination centers that people are saying of, well, we're doing it at this stadium and we can do 10,000 shots in an hour. And then they say, however, we only received 500 vaccines this week. Well, okay, then maybe that's the problem, right? So
Chris, how's Andrew doing on all of this?
Well, that'll kill 8 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Andrew's not doing all that well. I mean, with the caveat that there's just a shortage of vaccines, and that's not a New York problem or even a United States problem. That's a worldwide problem. As a matter of fact, the United States is actually vaccinating people at a much faster rate than almost anywhere else in the world, save, you know, a couple of countries. Israel and Great Britain, I believe, would be the two that are really doing better than we are. But vaccine rollout in this state has been chaotic, right? There's been a lot of problems with it. There have been reports that, you know, minority populations are lagging way behind white populations in vaccination rates. There have been long, confusing waits and people traveling hours to get vaccines. I mean, it's not been a good situation. And, you know, the governor does deserve some responsibility for that. There was a New York Times story a couple of days ago saying that, you know, 9 of his top health department people have resigned because they feel like their guidance is being ignored and that the state is tailoring public health recommendations to meet the preferred policy prescriptions of Andrew Cuomo. So, you know, that's very Trumpian. That's exactly what we saw with the CDC and Trump. And it's troubling. So
I'm sorry,
it's a mixed bag. On the one hand, there's a lot you can't blame the governor for, but on the other hand, there's a lot of things that he's doing that shouldn't be done.
Could you just go over those really quickly again? What are the things he's doing that he should be doing? He isn't doing.
Well, I mean, first of all, he should be listening to. He has said very publicly he doesn't trust the experts, right? And a lot of experts have resigned from his administration because they feel that they are not being listened to. Or that they're being told to say things that they don't want to say. I mean, that he shouldn't be doing that. I mean, every politician should be listening to the people who know a lot more about viruses than they do. You know, the distribution, that's a complicated thing, but there was a plan in place to have the counties handle vaccine distribution, and Andrew Cuomo scuttled that plan at the last minute, and that has added to the chaos. Again, there's just too few vaccines, and no politician can overcome that problem.
But
he was fine until he wrote that book, and now he considers himself one of the experts, and he's only listening to himself.
Yeah.
Well, that seems to be the case. Yeah.
I mean,
that book was a bad idea. There's just no way that. I mean, he says it wasn't a victory lap, but if you read it and you just the whole idea of it, it sure came across as a victory lap, and it was just done way, way too early.
Well, I talked to him about it, and I asked him about it, and he said, no, the book was about, if I remember correctly, the book was about leadership. It wasn't about the pandemic, but...
Right, exactly, leadership lessons. But then he's not lived up to a lot of the lessons that, you know, he puts forth in the book.
I mean, just some of the things that I, Chris, that I struggle with is trying to figure out, like, you have all of these issues with the vaccine and then you of getting it out to people. And then there are these declarations made of who can get it and who can't. And then it's basically, as you said, scuttled, but it is ultimately put in the lap of the health departments, who are then told where certain vaccinations can go and where they can't go and on a priority list. And that sort of changes, and they don't know the answers to that, the health departments. And the same thing with when he comes out and says, oh, and by the way, I'm going to support, I believe that we can look into high impact sports, but it's up to the county health departments, as if they don't have enough to do.
Well, yes, I think this is a very tough time, because I think that most of the people who are looking to get the vaccine, look, this is a life and death proposition. Does anybody disagree with that? Everybody knows that if you get the shot, you have a better chance, at least what we're hearing now, without the variations and this stuff like that, you have a better chance of making it. So therefore, what could be more important than getting it? And this has turned brother and sister against brother and sister. I'll tell you right now, I know it for a fact.
Chris?
Right. And there's just a shortage of vaccines. But some get, some don't. And the problem is the amount of time and effort and diligence required to actually get one benefits some people to the exclusion of other people. I mean, if you're somebody who's working in a grocery store or, you know, some other frontline worker and you have a demanding schedule, you don't have time to be online for 3 hours to try to get an appointment for yourself. Mm-hmm. So there's an unfairness in the process. And, you know, I think the state should be doing more to try to overcome that. I think it's interesting. Biden's kind of bypassing the state a little bit with this pharmacy plan. I don't know if that's, you know, he's sending a pointed message to the governors that they're not doing it the right way, or he's just maybe a little bit frustrated with the distribution, or I don't know. But that's interesting to me that he would do that.
My understanding that it was in addition to all
right.
of the other ones,
right.
You know, and that it was separate from what they were doing.
Right, but there's a shortage of vaccines, right? So anything that goes to one group or one goes in one direction doesn't go to the other,
doesn't go
other
the
direction,
other.
Right?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and there is a certain degree of theater here, because there aren't vaccines, but at the same time, I think what Biden's trying to do is show that the federal government is taking a different position than it did under Trump. And certainly, you know, Alan, when you interview the governor again, I would love for you to question his statement on experts, in air quotes. I mean, if he doesn't listen to his experts, who is he listening to?
Yeah.
And I think as voters in New York, we have a right to ask that question of him. I think in general, he's done a pretty solid job, but he just came out with some statements that I think. You know, really raised my eyebrows.
We are really, really late, and I am sorry that we have to. No, it's fine. It's not your fault. we're very late, and we have to get to everything here. My thanks to you all. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Chris, Bob, Rosemary, thank you. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.